Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Caroline.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload Podcast.
It was just us today.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, as soon as I walked in, there was a fourth chair here and I kicked it out the way. I was like, I don't need you this week.
Out of place. It's nice to have guests, but sometimes you just gotta relax.
Yeah.
Chill with your podcast buddies.
Indeed. Well, last week we had Hannah Fields from the Open Data Institute and we touched on the coronavirus, so
not,
to speak.
Not actually, otherwise we would be in quarantine. That's why there's no other guests on this week.
Otherwise, what's now known as COVID-19.
Yeah, that's the strain, isn't it?
Mm.
Or something, I don't know, words.
Yeah. And it looks like we're not going to be travelling so much this year.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Well, MWC, Mobile World Congress, has been cancelled.
Mm.
We know that there's another conference in Barcelona coming up that Alex Scroxton, our colleague, was supposed to be off to, and that's been cancelled as well because of fears about, you know, the fact that if you get loads of people in one area flying in from across the globe during the middle of a potential... Is it an epidemic? Pandemic?
It's a pandemic. It's across...
Mm.
Region, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, is that what the wisest thing to do? Get everyone to convene
in
one area, meet up that otherwise wouldn't? Probably not.
Yeah, especially given the global nature of those conferences.
Mm. Well, London Fashion Week has been suffering, hasn't it? It began today, Friday.
Oh, did it? How do you know that? I don't know that.
Yeah, there's so Chinese people who would have been there are not, and so on. And, of course, the whole clothing industry. Like many of the things we have, is made in China.
Mm. Yeah.
So there's the economic impact as well.
They're all quarantined, are they?
The Chinese.
Those
people in the world are now out.
Pardon?
The people in the world who were quarantined, who were flown from China, they've now been released into the general population.
And they give it 2 weeks, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a guy, before we got in here, I was on Twitter, and there was a comedian called Limmy who shared this video of someone who's been released from quarantine, and the guy is acting as if he's in like a prison movie, and he's just been like sort of sniffing the air and like, oh my god, freedom. So
yeah.
It's 2 weeks, so.
As someone who suffers from social anxiety, 2 weeks inside by myself is nothing.
I was gonna say I've had longer Netflix binge sessions, to be honest. So
yeah, you can't
just
catch coronavirus on the internet.
No.
Almost like the circle that we talked about last year. Maybe they could introduce a twist to that.
What the hell? Oh my god. Just
quarantine.
Yeah, enforced quarantine.
Yeah, they have to interact through social media somehow.
It might change the selection criteria for contestants. Like, oh, have you caught this strain of virus? You're in the circle! There you go.
There was a series about 10 years ago called Dead Set, which was a zombie outbreak, but the only people that survived were in the Big Brother house because they were trapped in there.
Oh, right.
And everyone on the outside of the house got, basically. Uh-huh.
But then the zombies started breaching the defences of the Big Brother
house. The way they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Incorrigible, really, zombies. Another thing we discussed last year was the various candidates for the Prime Ministership.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to figure out what they had to say about technology, which turned out to be not a great deal. With the exception, of course, of Matt Hancock.
Of course. Mr. Digital himself.
But last year we also took a look at Sajid Javid, the Saj, in podcast episode 20.
Is that long ago? Oh, God.
That's how long ago it was. Well, he didn't win, but he was appointed to the second most important job in the government. Chancellorship. Well, third most. But now he's gone.
Yes.
Replaced by Rishi Sunak.
Mm-hmm.
So a big promotion for him.
Yeah, it's quite big news because, the day before, there'd been a big... a protest outside the Houses of Parliament from all the contractor community who were protesting about the onset of the IR35 reforms. And they'd penned this open letter to Sajid Javid, and then like within a day it's all out of date. It's like, what can you do with an open letter? Can you scratch out the person it's addressed to? Like, sorry, no longer known at this address.
To
like, send it back to him.
Like,
oh, no, it's to this guy now. Can you take it on?
I don't imagine they think it's going to make a material difference that there is a new chancellor.
It's
going to be under the thumb of number 10,
yeah,
by the sounds of things, anyway.
I mean, it's well, you know, he's the new chancellor. He's got to do a budget, first of all, next month. The month after that, the new IR35 reforms come in.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I can't imagine him.
The Sash didn't get to do a budget.
No.
I think he's probably the only chancellor ever.
Is that
yeah.
his nickname?
The Sage, yeah.
Is that
it
just
is.
Your nickname?
For him? No, no, that's what he's known as.
Yeah.
Among
oh,
the
okay.
political commentariats. They know more about this stuff than I will ever know.
But I don't think there's enough time really to make a lot of difference. It's like anywhere, you know, whenever you move into any new job, there's a period of caretaking. Like, you've got to take care of the stuff that the last person didn't do before they left.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, I'm not optimistic a lot will change in the immediate term, to be honest.
But tell us, Caroline, about this the protest itself. What did that involve?
I think the final count was about 700 contractors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. With placards and stuff?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All saying, like, stop IR35. Yeah.
Wow.
Lots of pictures of Sajid Javid as well, being held up as well, like, take action, which I don't know... You know, if you knew he was going
to
resign, like the day before,
yeah,
it's a bit of, oh God, how much did you spend on that? It's bad. But yeah, it was contractors across the whole spectrum of the contracting world. So it was IT, but also NHS workers, social workers as well, all basically any limited company contractor who is going to set to be affected by the incoming IR35 reforms. And yeah, they went to the Houses of Parliament to present this open letter, which basically just said, it's time to press pause on this. It's causing too much devastation within the contracting community,
yeah,
and too much upheaval. Lots of people are being forced out of jobs as a result of it at the moment. And yeah, there are real genuine concerns about what that will mean across the whole state of the economy, not just IT. In basic terms, or like, you know, the terms we might talk about it, is like if all these IT contractors who tend to be the people who are delivering change within these organisations walk out, what does that mean for their digital transformation plans and stuff
yeah.
like that? But then at the other side is if locums, nurses, people like that aren't able to work at the moment, what does that mean for the state of the health service, you know, social care, everything really. It's but also things like agency drivers, so taxi drivers, things like that. It's anything you can think of to where a contractor, well, you're not on like a payroll.
It could have a massive impact.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's why they're all marching, saying there needs to be more time spent on making sure
yeah.
given to this, because it could be hugely disruptive when it comes in April, but there's already sort of fallout from it happening at the moment.
It's going to be a massive impact on you as well, Caroline. You'll
mm-hmm.
be writing 24/7.
Yeah, well, it already feels a bit like that at the moment. There's just so much happening at the moment. Lots of companies are still to declare what their IR35 compliance strategies are going to be. So
yes.
some of them are just saying, rather than having to deal with the IR35 reforms, we'll just not use any contractors, which we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way of dealing with it. Other people are just saying, well, rather than, you know, we will do the assessments, but it would be easier if everyone is just declared inside IR35. So we treat everyone as if they are an employee and we bring them in effectively, rather than let them continue to work outside.
Yeah.
But then that causes issues for people. If you've previously been outside and you move inside,
yeah.
there are concerns that might put you in the crosshairs of HMRC in terms of a future investigation into your tax affairs by them. So people like don't really want to run the risk of that, regardless of whether I'm outside IR35 and I know I am and I can prove it.
Yeah.
The costs involved in trying to prove that to HMRC is just too costly for a lot of people to go through. So lots of people just walking off jobs at the moment.
But going inside IR35,
mm-hmm.
if that's what you choose to do,
yeah.
but you don't get the benefits of being
yeah.
an employee, that...
It's like a zero rights employee, that's what everyone does.
I think that needs a bit of amplification, because I hadn't really thought about that very
mm.
much, but...
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean, if you're a limited company contractor and you supply services to an organisation, like that's that, and you operate outside IR35. You don't get any of the, you don't get employee benefits. You don't get paid holiday. You don't get paid sick leave. You don't get, you know, just name any kind of employee benefit you get. But on, but as part of the risk, so like, well, it's kind of like a, and to offset that, you can, it is a means of minimizing the amount of employment taxes you pay. So that is sort of, so it's kind of like, yeah, you don't get employee benefits, but your employment tax liabilities are lower.
Okay.
But then also the other trade-off is that the work might not be particularly regular as well. So you've got lots of, it's not like a, oh wow, you know, you don't have to pay as much tax. There's lots of risks involved with operating as a contractor. So from April the 6th, you don't get any of the employee perks, you don't get any of the benefits,
yeah,
as we've discussed. And your employment tax liabilities are liable to go up as well. So a lot of people who are moving from outside to inside will see their take-home pay go down. So that's, you know, a drawback on that. But again, your take-home pay is going down, you don't get any employee perks, and yeah, it's just not really a position anyone wants to be in.
Some of these people are very well paid, but that's kind of beside the point.
Yeah, it's, but you know, they are well paid for a reason. They bring in skills and expertise into businesses that they might not, you know, it might not make financial sense to keep these people on staff 365 days of the year because you don't have that specific project going on.
So I've spent a couple of days this week at Oracle Open World London, and one of the things we've been talking about across the team, myself and Cliff and some of the our tech target colleagues in the US, is there was a heightening in the war between Oracle and SAP, and the big battleground is the cloud. So it is. It is basic. The basic story is that a lot of SAP customers are on ECC6, so that's the ERP system that they're on and have been on for years. And SAP, for a good few years now, has been saying that 2025 will be the cutoff. They're not going to support ECC6 after 2025.
Right.
And they very recently announced that actually they would.
Is that because there's
so
just
they
so many people
extended the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the take up migration from ECC6 to S4HANA, which is their ERP based on their super fast database HANA, to some extent in the cloud, but actually not mostly. The migration wasn't really going well enough. I mean, people are migrating, people are implementing S4HANA, but not at the rate that SAP would like. So they have extended the deadline on ECC6 by a couple of years. They'll probably extend it again and things like that. But for a company like Oracle, this is obviously an opportunity because moving your ERP is a very costly thing to do.
Mm.
There's a lot of risk. It's not a trivial matter. So SAP customers are probably thinking, do I go to stick with SAP and go for S4HANA, either cloud or on-premise, or do I go for another vendor altogether? And Oracle would be maybe the most obvious. One of the Oracle execs I sat down with this week was Jürgen Linder, who's their SVP for SaaS globally, formerly of SAP. Which I always think is quite interesting when these guys move around at the top of these organizations. And I said to him, okay, well, why would Oracle be their first port of call if they're thinking of moving off ECC6 but not sticking with SAP? His response, fairly predictably perhaps, but you know, it's important to get the responses from these people because it's their business, right? Was Oracle has the full stack. It does infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and above all, software as a service. So there's full stack. It's all oven ready, to use Boris Johnson's favourite adjective. And they do, to be fair, they do have a full suite of enterprise applications running on the cloud. SAP isn't quite there yet. It's probably 2 years away from being close to that. So that, I mean, that was his response to that question. And he made this argument that they very often make, which is kind of the hairball argument, that the alternative to, say, going with SAP would be to stitch stuff together from Workday, Salesforce, put it all together yourself in the cloud. But there's a complexity of that. They would argue it's best just to go with Oracle all the way. They would say that. He did confirm that they are getting people in this category, and this is part of the dispute between SAP under its new leadership, Jennifer Morgan and Christian Klein, are having with Larry Ellison at the moment, which is Larry saying, oh yeah, SAP customers are coming over to us. He has been saying this for decades in various kind of iterations of this particular battle. But he has ramped up that rhetoric. But Jürgen Lindner said to me, yeah, we are seeing quite a lot of defections.
I just kind of think that if I was an SAP customer, and I'm not, never used it, but just saying, as an outsider, if someone gave me the option that you can either just keep on doing what you're doing, and you know, we may extend, you never have to move for years and years, or you can just lift everything up and take it over to Oracle, I think I'd just stay where I was. But is that not just, how are Oracle going to just basically, are they looking to win over people who are just like me and probably a bit lazy and just think, you know, it's still working, they're going to extend it for years, like, do we need to move? Do they have a strategy?
It's pretty risky to do that though. And it's ECC6 is, it will start showing its age once.
Okay,
I mean, like,
I did wonder if there was,
like, anything.
Yeah.
In life, whether you get a new car or whatever.
I was going to say, would it be like, we had the conversation the other week about Windows 7 and
yeah.
how to move off it, and obviously they're like, oh, you should move over because it's, you know, it's got better performance, Windows 10, all that sort of stuff. Are there things that they're...
And this is the software you're running your business on.
Yeah.
So it's quite a... It is quite a big deal. But yeah, there's a whole variety of ways that you can answer this complex problem. And one of the interesting things, I suppose, from our point of view, just as a publisher, is that if we publish a story about, say, the extension of the deadline to ECC6, the traffic for that will be enormous really quickly. So our readers are really engaged with this. This is very, very important to them.
But is that because they're thinking, oh, that means I don't have to do anything for a few more years?
Yeah, some of them will be rubbing their hands. They don't have to have that awkward conversation at the board. When on those rare occasions when the IT director actually gets involved in a board meeting, which won't be the case for many of our readers, they won't get to that kind of level of decision making or whatever. A lot of them will fall into that category. Do they belong to the kind of laggard kind of element in the user population though?
I don't know, but
as opposed to the early majority or the early adopters.
I feel like I'm showing my hand if I were ever to run a business. How quickly would it get run into the ground? I can't love to move, I don't know, upgrade.
Yeah.
Let's
it works
just,
as
let's
as
just keep
it
doing
is.
What we've always done. I would definitely get disrupted.
What we could also do is you could stick with your SAP tech but move it to Oracle.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is where the cloud comes in. Perhaps not straight away. They might just move it to Oracle hardware and then say, do you know what? Move it to the Oracle Cloud infrastructure.
I feel like when you said, here's where the cloud comes in, we needed like a smoke machine then. Special effects.
So the cloud is the battleground and
yeah.
It's just going to intensify. I had some other conversations at Oracle Open World which were very interesting, genuinely very interesting. I spoke with Alison Derbenwick Miller, who runs their Oracle for Research business, or activity rather, because there's actually only two of them doing this. And that's come out of, she was telling me, Larry Ellison about 18 months ago got very interested in cancer research. They've set up this activity where they're making the Oracle Cloud infrastructure available to science researchers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I did a couple of stories on this to do with the Bristol researchers, University of Bristol. One on that mosquito-borne disease.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, Claire, I think you were on that podcast with Alex. and another one on a smoking cessation drug. But it was a really nice conversation actually with Alison about a range of things, including women in IT and computer science and stuff like that. I had another interview with a guy from the National Grid who are doing very, James Kellaway, who's energy intelligence manager there. Small data science team doing very interesting work on predicting generation of solar energy on behalf of the National Grid, part of the whole kind of decarbonisation strategy that we have as a country. So interesting event, various ways. But still harping on the theme of cloud.
Yes.
Caroline, your attention was caught by a story, a rare one, not written by your good self, but by Carl Flinders.
Yes.
It was about...
It was about Goldman Sachs. Yeah, it got my spidey senses tingling this week. It's just kind of an interesting development, really, in the evolution of how financial services companies are viewing cloud. So for probably about 10 years ago, when sort of the hype around cloud was probably ramping up, nearing its peak, and with stuff about how, you know, if you use cloud, it's going to transform your business, it's going to just change the way all businesses run. There was always a, but maybe not for a little while for financial services. You know, the financial services, it's too highly regulated an industry to sort of want to rush to move to the cloud. They're data security concerns are just that much higher than most other types of industries. They won't want to move to the cloud too quickly. And also just this, a bit of, like, as we were alluding to earlier, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So,
yeah.
You know, if it works for us. So for financial services as well, it's people's money you're dealing with. So if, you know, if there's an outage or something like that caused by sort of a migration, moving over to new systems and stuff like that, it's a very fraught business. So it's kind of like, well, if we don't need to move over, if stuff's still working, let's just stick with what we've got. But over the last few years, that has changed. We've heard more banks in particular setting out plans to go all in on cloud and stuff like that. So the financial services community's relationship with cloud has changed and evolved quite a lot. But what's quite interesting about this Goldman Sachs thing is that it's not just a company that is using cloud. They have put forward this idea that they are so comfortable with cloud and what it can do that they've got ambitions to create their own cloud-based technology platform that they would then sell to other banks.
Yeah.
So instead of these banks, I'm assuming this is how it would work, instead of these...
And they have the domain knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. So instead of these... banks going out separately, individually, building their own probably similar platforms, all trying to address similar regulatory challenges as well as performance challenges, why not just let one bank do it and then they will sell it to other people? And this sort of came to light through an internal memo that was seen by Yahoo Finance. But yeah, they said it's very much modelled on the sort of Amazon Web Services way of working. So I don't know how familiar either of you are with the origin story of Amazon Web Services. But it was basically born, and I'm paraphrasing lots of this and I'm probably getting lots of it wrong. I'm speculating wildly, really. So the origin story of Amazon Web Services is that Amazon, the retail arm, needed infrastructure to sort of run its online business on, and they decided to sort of, we can create this in-house, run our own business off our own servers. But then there was, I think from memory, it's sort of like they had so much capacity, it was like, well, we can actually start selling this to other businesses. And that's how Amazon Web Services started.
Yeah.
It was like in-house IT department deciding, hey, why don't we sell it to other people?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what Goldman Sachs aiming for here. Yeah, so it's just, like I say, it's a really interesting, like, a new development within financial services.
Mm-hmm.
But as with all these things, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And one thing I did wonder about is if there would be any pushback competitively from these plans. Just, it's one thing for them to say, hey, would you buy, we're a bank or we're potentially a competitor, would you buy our technology platform off us?
Mm.
And it's kind of like, well, financial data is very sensitive. How would you feel as a competitor trusting your data to someone else? Which is something that Amazon has had pushback from.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before from a retail perspective, but there are other industries where it's like, you know, Netflix is a huge flagship customer for AWS, and it has
yeah.
been, and it still is. But people have always said, "Oh, but they've got Amazon Prime. Why does Netflix still? Why are they happy using that?" And that's like, well, that's their own conversation to have. But not every organization is quite happy to, you know, run in a similar way.
Yeah, like you said, banks and financial services and institutions might be, you know, like slightly more protective over.
Yeah. And also, it's such a highly competitive industry as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like, would we all want to rely on the same baseline of technology, or would someone think, okay, actually, to get a competitive advantage, maybe it's better if we go alone,
yeah,
or something like that? But then that has, you know, that has backfired on other people who've tried to do that against AWS, because it's they just don't have the in-house capabilities, domain knowledge, or just the finances to build their own cloud, if you know what I mean. So
mm-hmm.
it's. But yeah, it would just be interesting to see if, it's like this kind of hippie, drippy kind of, hey, we'll build a platform and everyone can use it. And it's like, well, would everybody within the industry feel happy doing that?
Yeah,
I
suppose time will tell.
Yeah, as always in these things. But it is interesting. That you do see lots of this now, and it's a horrible word because I hate doing words like that. But yeah, the whole co-opetition thing. So
co-opetition.
Yeah.
Yes.
So instead of competing, well, you are competing, but you're also working together on the basis that everyone will get to where they want to go to more quickly if everybody goes together and helps everybody along the way, kind of thing. Which it's something. It's like a concept that is,
yeah,
I say, gathering momentum. But it's like the
love it.
Financial services, you know, bankers, or that cutthroat business world.
Yeah, but you've got to compete with, you know, like the new market entrants.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're doing clever stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, time will tell. But I think it's a really interesting development, and like I say, it's.
And the co-CIO, I think is the title, Marco Argenti, at Goldman Sachs. It's an AWS guy.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, you can see
so
where,
again,
he got the idea from.
these people do move around.
Mm-hmm.
And Oracle have now got a CMO who came from AWS.
Okay,
yeah.
What does the M stand for?
Marketing.
Oh, Chief Marketing Officer.
Cool,
yeah.
Everybody moves around everywhere.
Apart from us, we just stay where we are, reporting on this stuff.
Well, otherwise, it'd be very hard to keep track of everybody. If they're all moving, then we're all moving. It's just,
yeah.
It's just best if we all just stay in one place.
We're a sort of still point.
Mm.
Yeah, but that's your business strategy, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't do anything ever. Just keep everything the same. Never change.
Yeah.
And just wait for everybody else to go, actually, no one's moving. It's like I say, maybe I won't be disrupted. Yeah. Yeah, that business
There's
guru
no
book I'm working on.
It's for you.
Yeah, new chapter.
Well, after the sheer exhaustion of being at Oracle Open World at Excel,
ugh,
for 2 days, I haven't really planned my week for next week. Anyone else? Or are we just going to take it a day at a time?
Oh, day at a time.
I take everything 5 minutes at a time. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it just... There's
very
just,
wise.
There's just
very
more
wise.
And more IR35 stuff. So at the moment, my week is planned, and then an IR35 story will break, and then my plan goes out the window, and
yeah.
Then I'm like, oh, my to-do list, everything, all the case studies, all the features I was going to write about non-IR35 stuff gets pushed back by another week, or another 2 weeks, or a month at the moment. So
yeah, well, Sajid Javid's week next week is going to be very different to what he had anticipated.
Well, what is he? Is he still in government?
No.
He's not?
No, he's gone to the back benches, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, so he's
oh,
not...
Okay.
I was like, he couldn't have gone back to banking then. Like, he's not just...
He isn't, like,
not straight away.
No, he's not walking around Liverpool Street at the minute. Hi, guys. need a banker?
Yeah.
I don't know how it works.
Exactly like that, I'm sure.
Like I say, not a business brain, but...
I think that maybe all we have time for this week, and probably want to get some lunch. It just remains for me to say thank you very much to Caroline.
You're welcome.
Thank you to Claire.
Anytime.
And thank you for listening. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.